This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
So, okay, let the record show that it is 7:50 a.m. on the 21st day of January, 2021, and this is the time and place set for a hearing in the matter of the South Dakota State Judiciary, Senate Judiciary Committee. And our agenda said we were starting at 7:45, but we're a little bit late due to technical difficulties, but we will proceed on. We've got one of our pages here this morning, if I can get you to introduce yourself. This gets repetitive, I'm sure, but...
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Trinity Peterson. I'm from Willow Lake, South Dakota. I'm currently a senior at Willow Lake High School.
And it doesn't work. Sorry.
Oh. Can you hear me?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mute you. Please keep going. I'm very sorry.
You're okay. Anyways, I'm a senior at Willow Lake, and next year I'm planning to go to SDSU and major in political science.
Okay. Thank you. And... want to greet also anyone who's watching these proceedings on the internet or on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We appreciate your interest in your state government and what we're doing here at this time of the morning. So I would remind everyone here to turn off your cell phones, which makes me... I don't want to be the one to violate my own ruling there. Okay. So, and Madam Secretary, would you take a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. All right. Senator Diedrich?
Diedrich here.
Johns?
Here.
Roll?
Here.
Schoenbeck?
And he's excused.
Thank you. Wheeler?
And he's excused.
Duhamel?
Here.
Rush?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have quorum.
Okay, thank you. So, has everybody had a chance to review the minutes from the last meeting?
I move to approve the minutes from the last meeting.
Second.
We have a motion to approve the minutes from Senator Johns and a second from Senator Duhamel. Any discussion? Hearing none, everyone in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. The minutes are approved. So those of you who are testifying today, I would remind you to sign in there, and if you're lobbyists, that you wear the badges, and any handouts that you have that you want to distribute, have the pages distribute those. The record should show that Senator Schoenbeck is here now, too, so you can add him to the list of attendees. And questions for the committee will be addressed through the chair. So we have an agenda today for four bills, Senate Bills 13, 14, 15, and 16. So is there any changes to the agenda? So hearing none, we will proceed with that agenda. And first of all, we'll start out with Senate Bill 13. And those of you who are testifying, I don't have any objection if you take your mask off when you're testifying. You're far enough from us, but I would request that you use one of the wipes there and wipe down the microphone when you're done. But
thank you, Mr. Chair.
It makes it a little easier to hear.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Doug Clark. I'm the Deputy Secretary for the Department of Corrections. I'm here this morning to testify in support of Senate Bill 13, an agency bill with the goal of correcting an oversight within current statute. The bill corrects an error in statutory cross-reference in SDCL 24-1530, which focuses on the waiver of a parole hearing or appearance before the parole board. The current statute incorrectly references 25:15:23, which actually does not exist. Further, Title 25 pertains to domestic relations. The correct reference should be read 24:15:23, which deals with penal institutions and parole. The error was made in a bill drafted back in 2002, and it wasn't caught previously by the Code Commission, LRC, or the DOC. This correction was included in HB 1012 last year, but it was vetoed by the governor because of objections to placing such a large number of statutory changes in a single bill. I would respectfully ask for your support in passing this straightforward bill aimed at fixing a longstanding oversight. With that, I will stand by for questions. Thank you.
And Mr. Clark, if you would have a seat, and once we're done with the proponents and any opponents, we'll give the committee an opportunity to ask you any questions. So are there any further proponent testimony in this matter? And have we received any communications from the Internet that somebody wanted to testify on this bill?
No.
We have not. Okay. So any further proponents? Hearing none, we'll go to opponents. Any opponents for this bill? Any opponents? Okay, hearing none. Anybody on the committee have any questions for Mr. Clark? Apparently there's none. Can we have any motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Duhamel?
I would make a motion of due pass for Senate Bill 13.
Okay. Seconded by Senator Johns. So, any further discussion about the due pass motion? Hearing none, Madam Secretary, would you take the roll of the senators?
Yes, sir. Senator Diedrich?
Aye.
Senator Johns?
Aye.
Roll.
Aye.
Duhamel?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye. Senator Schoenbeck is here now.
Can I vote? I'm going to go with aye.
Senator Schoenbeck?
Aye.
All right. Thank you. The motion passes with 6 ayes and 0 nays and 1 excused.
Okay. Senate Bill 13 has been passed with the due pass and will go to the floor, and I will certify that as a consent calendar member or issue. So, Senate Bill 14.
Morning, Mr. Morning. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Mike Leipold, the Cabinet Secretary for the Department of Corrections. So I'm here to testify this morning in favor of Senate Bill 14, which is an agency bill to limit the time children in need of supervision are held in detention under certain circumstances. The certain circumstances being addressed in this bill are children in need of supervision, or CHINs, as we call them in South Dakota, held in secure detention regarding a violation of a valid court order. So a CHINs is a juvenile who is charged with or has committed an offense that would not be criminal if committed by an adult. Examples are truancy, running away, underage consumption, those types of violations. Section 1 adds the requirement for a written order that, number 1, identifies the violated court order. Number 2, determines detention is the best available placement for the youth. Number 3, specifies the length of detention hold and outlines the plan for release from detention. And it limits the stay in detention up to 7 days, regardless if revocation proceedings have been initiated. Section 2 extends the same parameters to adjudicated CHINs. Section 3 adds a reference to Section 1 regarding appropriate use of the valid court order exception. These changes are consistent with the requirements of the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act as amended by the Juvenile Justice Reform Act of 2018. South Dakota committed to comply with the Act in 2003. Since then, South Dakota has remained in compliance with the core requirements of the Act. Our compliance ensures we can pass through funding to community-level programs focused on prevention and alternatives to detention. We also support programs focused on reducing disproportionate minority contact within the juvenile justice system and a tribal juvenile probation officer. The DOC was designated as the state agency that would work to ensure compliance, which is why we are bringing this bill before you today. Our department works with UJS and the detention centers to monitor facilities for adherence to the federal act. That can become difficult when state law does not align. In calendar year 2020, the change in the federal act was conveyed to detention centers and judges across the state. I'm pleased to report that the valid court order exception was not needed for any holdings, and that of the 20 CHINS offenders who violated a valid court order and could have been held under the exception, all were released within 24 hours, and they only stayed in detention an average of 17 hours. CHINS probation violators are being served through shelter care, non-secure holding facilities, or at home rather than secure detention. This is in the best interest of the child and keeps detention costs to the counties low. In addition to supporting the federal requirement of limiting valid court order holds to 7 days or less, this bill complements other juvenile justice initiatives in our state. It adheres to our Juvenile Justice Reinvestment Initiative goal of preventing deeper involvement in the juvenile justice system, specifically for nonviolent misdemeanors, and CHINS, and keeps with the spirit of statewide juvenile detention alternative initiative efforts to have the decision to detain and the length of detention be logically related to the seriousness of the offense or violation and the juvenile's risk to community safety. Please join me in supporting this bill that will codify current practice, align state and federal holding parameters, and keep low-level nonviolent youth with their family and community supports rather than serving a lengthy stay in secure detention. Thank you, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. So is there any other proponents speaking on behalf of Senate Bill 14?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'd like to read into the record a written statement from Beth O'Toole, who is the current chair for the South Dakota Council of Juvenile Services. She is obviously a proponent. Her letter is as follows. Members of the Senate Judiciary
Committee. She was attempting to email that to us, and I understand we had technical difficulties.
Yeah, she emailed it yesterday at January 20th at 5:38 p.m. So, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I currently serve as the chair for the South Dakota Council of Juvenile Services, and I've worked as a member of CJS for the past 13 years. I'm writing on behalf of the council to express our strong support for Senate Bill 14, the bill put forth by the Department of Corrections to limit the time children in need of supervision are held in detention. The proposed bill is necessitated by changes made to Federal Juvenile Justice Reform Act of 2018. South Dakota committed in 2003 to comply with the federal law, and we have been in compliance with the core requirements of the federal law since that time. Our compliance with the federal law allows CJS to award federal funds to community programs which focus on delinquency prevention and detention alternatives. We also work closely with communities to reduce disproportionate minority contact within juvenile justice system statewide and pass through funding to support tribal probation efforts. It is important for CJS and the Department of Corrections to ensure that federal and state law are in alignment, and in fact, this change in the law aligns with current practice in our state. The Council also believes Senate Bill 14 supports the state's underlying philosophy of keeping kids in community programs whenever possible and shortening stays in detention. Thank you for the opportunity to submit my comments for consideration. I am proud of the work CJS is able to accomplish and request your support to help ensure the continuation of services to our youth and their families. Sincerely, Beth O'Toole, Chair, South Dakota Council of Juvenile Services. Thank you.
Okay, my microphone's on now. Any further proponent testimony? And the only person that had contacted at a distance was Ms. O'Toole, so, and her statement has been read into the record here, so that went for remote testimony. So is there any opponent testimony? Any opposition testimony? Okay, hearing none, are there any questions by any members of the committee? Any questions by any members of the committee? Okay, hearing none, can we does anybody have a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johns.
Thank you. I would move that Senate Bill 14 go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. It's an excellent bill.
Thank you, Senator Johns. Second from Senator Roll. Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Hearing none, Madam Secretary, would you call the roll? And Madam Secretary, Senator Wheeler is now present as well.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, folks. All right. Senator Diedrich?
Diedrich, aye.
Johns?
Aye.
Roll?
Aye.
Schoenbeck?
Aye. Hey, we all have bad days.
Wheeler?
Aye.
Duhamel?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
Okay. 7-0 unanimously, and I will also direct that this go on to the consent calendar. So next bill up today is Senate Bill 15. We have proponents on Senate Bill 15.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Clark.
Members of the committee, Doug Clark again, Deputy Secretary for the Department of Corrections. I'm again before you this morning to ask for your support of Senate Bill 15, which is an agency bill brought forth with the knowledge and support of the South Dakota Board of Pardons and Paroles to clarify the voting requirements necessary by the board to grant or deny parole to an offender or make clemency recommendations to the governor. Little history. Current statute authorizes the parole board chair the ability to establish hearing panels as a means of conducting much of the board's work. Without the use of hearing panels, given the amount of work and the number of hearings to conduct each month, the board simply could not complete the work that needs to be done. The monthly average so far, the last 12 months, is a total of 249 total actions per month taken by the board. So while statute provides hearing panels have the same decision-making authority as the full board, in cases that require it, hearing panels also serve as a screening mechanism for the full board. The parole board, in policy, establishes which cases require full board review and approval based on certain criteria, including risk levels, types of crimes, length of sentences, those matters. And a hearing panel on its own can refer any hearing to the full board for review at any time as well. In 2019, because of a steady increase in clemency applications, SDCL 2415A11 was modified to give the board the authority to utilize hearing panels for clemency recommendations, just as it has with all other types of hearings. Prior to this change, statute specifically required a majority vote of the full board before a positive recommendation for clemency could be made to the governor, thus excluding the use of hearing panels specifically for these types of hearings. The resulting language in 2415A11, along with the language included in the statute, quote, without the concurrence of two board members, end quote, within the same statute is a bit unclear, and if interpreted literally, could result in full board parole or clemency decisions being determined without a majority of the voting board, or, at a minimum, such a decision facing potential costly and time-consuming legal challenges. The suggested revisions to 2415A11 resolve this issue by clearly differentiating hearing panels from full board hearings and identifying and establishing the specific minimum voting requirements necessary for each. While at the same time, the language change within the statute does not impede the board's flexibility and authority to determine in policy the types and levels of cases that do require full board review and action. So with that, I would respectfully request your support in passing Senate Bill 15, and I will stand by for any questions the committee may have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Clark.
Thank you.
Any further proponent testimony? Any further proponent testimony? Did we have anyone contact us that they wanted to testify remotely?
No, sir.
Okay. Any opponent testimony? Any opponent testimony? Okay. Hearing none, is any questions from any member of the committee for Mr. Clark?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Dietrich. Senator Dietrich.
Because we have the luxury of a little time and we have people listening throughout the state, could you just briefly define clemency and parole for those who are listening who may not be familiar with those terms?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Clark.
Parole is really the early release from prison. It requires supervision conditions. In South Dakota, we really have two mechanisms. We call it an old parole system and a new parole system. Under the new system, law and statute determines the time to parole. And so it establishes what's called a presumptive parole date. So if that offender reaches that presumptive parole date and is in compliance, they're released automatically on that presumptive date. Where the board comes in is to play is with people that are either found non-compliant at the time of that initial parole date and not released from prison, or are released from custody and subsequently violate their parole conditions and are returned. Then those two scenarios, they become what are called discretionary cases, and their release is dependent completely on the discretion of the parole board. There are certain requirements that are established in statute, including the one we're talking about here today, that govern the length of time that cases can be continued and that type of thing. With regard to clemency is deals with commutations of sentence or pardons or the remission of fines, which is pretty rare. I think currently, I think the average, I would estimate, number of pardons the board hears every month is between 8 and 10 pardon applications, and those would be from citizens. Offenders in prison and on parole are eligible to apply for a pardon, but of course, that's not necessarily what the board's looking for or the governor is looking for. So I hope that answers your question.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up too. Yeah, I think, thank you. I think that helps the public understand the difference between basically release on conditions and a forgiveness. Did I hear you right that the board deals with 240 requests per month? Is that right?
Mr. Chair, that was the 12-month average is about 249 For that would be for the last 12 months. I think that includes a high of over 300 and a low of like 140-some, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And thank you to those boards and panels that deal with that's a large volume, and it's important to for the effective administration of our prison system. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dietrich. But that raised some questions with me. There's obviously within the last day or so, there's a lot of publicity about pardons nationwide. Could you address the pardon system in South Dakota? And as I understand, there's two different ways that really people can go and maybe address that and how frequently that happens in South Dakota.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. The authority to grant clemency lies solely with the governor in South Dakota. Our current governor, as well as most of the preceding ones for the foreseeable past, have designated the authority for the board to serve as a screening panel for clemency decisions. I would say probably 3 or 4 years ago, under the direction of Governor Dugard, we established an online pardon application process, which was designed by BIT in our state, the Bureau of Information Technology, as a pretty user-friendly system to walk people seeking clemency or pardons particularly through the process of submitting an application to the board. Some pardon applicants choose to retain counsel to appear on their behalf. Our current board, for the last number of years that I can recall, I had association with the parole board for over 16 years now, rely on personal hearings with applicants, so that applicant would appear in front of the 9-member parole board in person, and answer a series of questions, outlining the crime, what they've done since the crime, why they need a pardon, because it is supposed to be an extraordinary action. So it's a very, for somebody that's been in criminal justice for the criminal justice system for nearly 30 years. It's a pretty rewarding part of my job. I've always enjoyed pardons because it's the culmination of the criminal justice system working the way it should.
Thank you. Does any of the questions that either Senator Dietrich or I have asked raise any questions on behalf of other members of the committee? Okay. Hearing none, thank you. This time, then, we would go to consideration of any action on behalf of about Senate Bill 15.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Move to pass.
Okay. So motion to do pass by Senator Schoenbeck.
Second.
Second by Senator Wheeler. So any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schoenbeck.
It's probably evident from what's been said already, but there is no harder board in state government. None. Nothing that comes close to the demands that this puts on the people that I sometimes wonder about their sanity for agreeing to serve, but we certainly appreciate that they do it. It's a week a month out of these people's lives. It takes a dedicated group.
And I see we have a member of the board who is sitting back here who seems from his facial things to be agreeing wholeheartedly with you.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
That particular one would be evidence of what I said about that they may be a little bit, you know. But in general, they're pretty smart.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, Madam Secretary, would you take the roll, please?
Yes, sir. Senator Dietrich?
Aye.
Johns?
Aye.
Roll?
Aye.
Schoenbeck?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye.
Duhamel?
Aye.
Rush.
Aye.
It passes unanimously.
Okay, and I would order that this go on the consent calendar as well. So that leaves us with one bill yet today. That is Senate Bill 16. Is there any proponents for Senate Bill 16? Mr. Clark, you're on the hot seat today, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Hopefully this is the last time you have to listen to me today, but I'm here once again this morning to testify in support of Senate Bill 16. This, like the previous bill that was discussed, is a DOC bill brought forth with the knowledge and support of the South Dakota Board of Pardons and Paroles. This bill attempts to simplify existing processes by removing requirements in 2415A29 that a new parole date be calculated in every case following revocation and imposition of an offender's suspended sentence by the board, while continuing to require it only in the situations that it's necessary. In terms of background, SDCL 23A2718.4 and case law clearly established the board's authority with regard to suspended sentences by saying, quote, the board is charged with the responsibility for enforcing the conditions imposed by the sentencing judge, and the board retains jurisdiction to revoke the suspended portion of a sentence for violation of the terms of parole or the terms of suspension, end quote. There are several different situations when the board considers revoking and imposing suspended sentences. First, and by far the most common, is following an offender's release to parole supervision, generally as part of a parole revocation. The next most common scenario is after an offender's been found noncompliant at their presumptive or initial parole date. In these two situations, the offender, having passed their respective initial parole date, is already in that discretionary parole cycle that we referenced earlier. When the board determines within statutory directives already included in this statute when the offender's case will be reviewed again and ultimately when or if he or she will be released to supervision again. In these cases, the requirement to recalculate a new parole date based on the new sentence following a revocation of suspended sentence is unnecessary and can actually, in a way, be in conflict with the board's decision of when to set the next discretionary review date. So this ultimately leads to staff having to basically work the math backward in order to determine the proper sentence recalculation to match the decision the board wants to make in that case. Subsequently, this results in not only significant amount of additional unnecessary work for staff, but also very often complex sentence recalculations to match the board's decision and additional errors in calculation and paperwork that must be reconciled when those errors occur. The bill clarifies and greatly simplifies the process by removing the requirement with regard to those two scenarios I referenced earlier, and creating a new section which continues to require the recalculation of a new parole date only in the rare situation where it is warranted and necessary. And that's when the suspended sentence is revoked and imposed by the board prior to the offender's initial presumptive parole date. In this situation, the result of the imposition of the suspended sentence by the board would create a new sentence in which the new initial parole date must be established based on the newly imposed incarceration portion. So by kind of right-sizing the bill and separating it up, it becomes much less confusing. And I want to emphasize the fact that these revisions have no impact on the board's authority or current processes with regard to determining future discretionary parole dates. Instead, the focus of these changes are meant to greatly simplify the processes, reduce procedural redundancies and potential errors, and eliminate a significant amount of unnecessary work for the staff and for the board. With that, I respectfully ask for the committee's support in passing Senate Bill 16, and I will stand by for any questions the members may have.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Any further proponent? Any further proponent? Did we have anyone who had wanted to appear testify remotely?
No, sir.
Okay, no one remote. Any opponent testimony? Any opponent testimony? Okay. Hearing none, any questions by any Senator Johns?
Thank you. Mr. Clark, would you please give us an example of what you mean by a suspended sentence and the revocation? If I sentence somebody to 10 years and suspend all of it and place it on probation, then the revocation occurs with the court. Your circumstance is different. And usually I think, for example, with the 10 years and I suspend 3 and they go to the pen. So why don't you explain for the listening audience and the rest of the board what we're really talking about.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I will do my best, sir. Using the example you gave, the value, somebody that's being sentenced to prison and receives a suspended sentence from the court or from the judge, the benefit in that suspended sentence comes with regard to shortening their potential time, incarceration time on that sentence. So, for instance, if somebody was sentenced to the pen for a 10-year sentence, and let's say their initial parole date is 25% by statute, that would mean you would take 25% of that 10 years, and that would establish your initial parole date. If you were to suspend 5 years of that sentence, that initial parole date is calculated only on the incarceration portion of that sentence. So it's calculated on 5 years versus the whole 10 years. So the true benefit of a judge giving an offender a suspended sentence or suspending a portion of a sentence is that offender has an opportunity to get out on parole sooner than they would have had that time not been suspended. So ultimately, there's a handoff that occurs, and it's pretty well documented in statute between the courts and the board. And the statute I referenced earlier that references the board's authority to revoke and impose the suspended portion is kind of that handoff. So the board has to enforce the conditions of that's set by the judge for that suspension. And in doing so, you know, there's different situations where with which that occurs. So when somebody were to be released from parole, let's say at their initial parole date, and subsequently violate their parole, this suspended time is still hanging out there. But that offender, by violating their parole, becomes a discretionary case anyway. And so the benefit of that suspended sentence has already occurred. And I'm not saying it's irrelevant, because there's still some relevancy, but from a when am I going to parole again perspective, it becomes largely irrelevant in that case. So in those rare cases where the board would consider violating a suspended sentence prior to an offender's release, that would be, for instance, if they committed a felony while they were incarcerated in prison, the board would review the case and consider revoking and imposing that suspended sentence before it even started.
Paula? So under that circumstance, if it was for 10 years and you say half of it been suspended ordinarily, then it would be the 5 on the 5. But if they violate it while in the penitentiary, then are they back to the 10-year? It would be based on the 10 years?
Mr. Chair?
Clark.
Their term expires date would always be that 10 years. The board, if the board were to revoke and impose that suspended portion of that sentence, the board would set that next discretionary review date, that next discretionary parole review date, and determine when that offender gets an opportunity to be released again.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, no further questions by the committee. The chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Duhamel.
I make a motion of due pass for Senate Bill 16.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Wheeler. I've been moved by Senator Duhamel and seconded by Senator Wheeler that we pass Senate Bill 15 with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Well, I'm going to engage in a little bit of discussion about this, and I don't know if there's anybody here in the room other than Mr. Teason who probably remembers this, but at many, many years ago, there was a individual was released from the penitentiary on parole, and because they had calculated that way and promptly went and robbed a bank. And the Attorney General's office submitted that to a grand jury and indicted, and the grand jury indicted one of the records people at the penitentiary for having made a mistake because it was very obvious that this person was released on a way earlier than they were supposed to be, several years earlier than they were supposed to. And the Attorney General telling Hughes and asked me to prosecute the case, which if you want to talk about people being crazy to accept something like that, but I did. And in the course of the trial, there were multiple experts on parole dates who testified, and every one of them had a different parole date calculation about when that should have been done. You know, obviously, a jury acquitted in that particular case, but it certainly was an indication of the necessity of having a clear and method that doesn't result in that kind of confusion. So certainly I support this in this. And Madam Secretary, I would ask you to call the roll.
Yes, sir. Senator Diedrich?
Aye.
Johns?
Aye.
Roll?
Aye.
Schoenbeck?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye.
Duhamel?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
I'm sorry, sir, I couldn't hear you.
Pardon? Aye. Who's that?
Thank you. It passes unanimously, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and I will have this, certify this to be placed on the consent calendar as well. So that completes our agenda that we had today. Let me ask the committee. We've been, according to the standard procedure, we're supposed to start at 7:45. Our schedule has been pretty light so far, and so my preference is going to be to say that we're going to start at 8 o'clock. If our agenda starts to get fuller and we have a little bit more difficulty in accomplishing that within our time, we may change that back to 7:45. But for now, we'll be starting at 8 o'clock until there's a further action on that. So, is there any further business before this committee this morning?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're in adjournment. So, Rosie, if you would stay on, Senator Duhamel and I are going to talk about with you about our agenda for next Tuesday then.
Okay.